the notion that service to humanity is service to God, or is it the other way around? Is it that service to God means service to humanity? Or as they say in India, Madhava Seva is Madhava Seva, or is it the opposite? Madhava means the Manusha, mankind, humanity. Is it true that by serving humanity, trying to uplift their plight, is this the best service to God? Or is it that service to God uplifts all of humanity? So we can use the analogy of the root of a tree and the leaves of a tree. If we want to serve the root of the tree, do we put water on the leaves? Does the root get served that way? No. But if we put water on the root, do the leaves get served? Yes. And then we need to find out who's the root. Is humanity the root? Or is God the root? Janma jasayataha. So we learn from Vedanta Sutra that the root of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Janma jasayataha. The source is Sri Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo sarvam bhavartate iti matvava jante mam buddha bhava samandita. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he is the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from him. If everything emanates from him, that means he's the source, because a root is that which the whole tree emanates. Everything emanates means material and spiritual. Material, when we speak of material things, we can break it down. We can divide the material energy into several different categories. Sometimes the material energy is divided into 8 categories. Bhumir apona lo vayu kamma no bhadhirevacha ahankara. That's it. 8. Those 8. Then, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Or the Sankhya philosophy divided into 24 elements. That includes the senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, the working senses, and the 5 elements, the 3 subtle elements. So that's another 10, and then another, the elements of sense objects, sight, sound, touch, taste, and smell, 15. So in this way, 24 divisions. But one unique thing about the material energy is that none of these departments have consciousness. They are all material constituents, either gross or subtle, but none of them have awareness of their own existence. If you take a piece of stone, it is not aware of its own existence. Or if you take some water, the water is not conscious. Then, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Aparayam ikasvanyam prakatim vidime param. Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yayedam Tarya Dejagat. Besides this inferior energy, which is the material, that is called Apara Prakriti, there is another energy which is superior, the Para Prakriti. Para means superior. Superior energy, what is that? Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho. The Jiva, the living entities. That means the parts and parcels. Omai vanso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. These are eternal Parts and parcels, spiritual entities. We are, all of us are jivas. And we can distinguish that any creature, any species that is alive, there must be a jiva in there. For example, in the body of a tree. The tree grows, the tree produces fruits, the tree gives offspring in the form of seeds. That means there's a jiva in there, because there's consciousness also. It wants to live. Sometimes you see, in the middle of some expanse of pavement, some little tiny crack, and there's some little plant coming out. He's struggling so hard. He's struggling so hard to live in that, between that crack. He wants to live. And the ants want to live, and the worms want to live, and the birds, everyone, because the jivas by nature are alive, they're living. So, Krishna says, I'm the source, sarva yonishu. Sarva yonishu means all species. Yoni means species or womb, literally. Is all different types of species, sarva yonishu kote, sambhavanti murtaya. Aham brahma, tasam brahma mahat yoni, aham bija pradapita. Of all the different species, I am the seed giving father. That's God, that's Krishna. It's not just a sectarian concern for those from Hindus or Muslims or Christians. No, he's for everyone. All species even. They're also his parts and parcels. They're also his children. He accepts everyone. They're all his children, all the living entities. And the material energy, that is his separated material energy. But it belongs to him. And they say, well, if it's not conscious, then it's not so important. Well, it may not be as important, but if you go to someone's home, if you kidnap their child, obviously they'll be very upset. But if you steal some of their possessions, they'll also be upset. Everything belongs to him. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says he's the proprietor of everything. So, when we understand this, that everything emanates from him, everything's being maintained by him, and ultimately everything goes back into him at the time of annihilation, and then again comes out when there's another creation, bhutva bhutva paliyate. It puts things in the proper perspective, who we're dealing with, who should be served. Humanity is a very temporary phenomenon. The living entities that are in human bodies now may not have been in human bodies in the past. And in the future they may also not be in human bodies. It's a very temporary thing. And what do we gain by serving humanity? What is the use of serving humanity? And the other question is, will we actually be able to serve humanity? What service can we do? How can we help humanity? Some people think that we have to try to make the poor people richer. We have to give them money, give them charity. But we're not taking into account the law of karma. If you try to make a poor person wealthy, by his karma, he's supposed to be poor. So it doesn't work. There's a little story about this. Lord Shiva was once, and his wife, they were passing a very poor man. And Parvati said, oh, why don't you give him some charity? He's so poor. Lord Shiva said, he's poor because of his karma. He's going to be poor anyway. She said, no, no. Anyway, don't be so philosophical. Just give him some charity. So he said, alright, I'll show you. So he gave him a watermelon. Inside there was some very valuable jewel. worth, you know, so much. So he actually became a very wealthy person. But instead, he traded away the watermelon for a few paisa. If he had just opened it, he would have seen the jewels, but instead he... So, if you give someone who's in the poor condition, if you try to elevate him, he goes back to his condition, because it's his karma. Karanam guna sango sya sadasat joni janmashu. That means everyone is suffering or enjoying according to his past activities. And we cannot artificially change that. It's not within our power. So does that, so someone may say, well, does it mean we should just be callous and not compassionate towards these people? Your desire to be compassionate is okay, but you have to know how to be compassionate. Compassion has to be with knowledge, otherwise it becomes harmful. Just like if we see a person who's very corpulent, maybe, and we think, oh no, they shouldn't be so corpulent, so heavy, so I think I'll reduce their weight by cutting off some. No. That type of compassion is not helpful. One has to have knowledge. So, again, what is that knowledge? The knowledge is that serving the root, putting water on the root, will actually give benefit to the whole tree. If someone goes with a drop of water, puts a drop on each leaf, and thinks that he's done a wonderful service. He serviced 100 trees today, 5 million leaves. He put drops. Worked very hard. And the result? The tree will still die. The leaves will not get no benefit. But if he puts water on the root, then his service is much easier and much more fruitful, much more beneficial. Now in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, he gives us a clear idea. Anmanavamadbhakto majadimam namaskaru mame vaishasi satyam te pratijane priyosame. He gives us a clue, four things. Manmana, always think of me. Madbhakta, become my devotee. Madhyaji, worship me. Mam namaskuru, and offer your obeisances to me. This is Krishna's very succinct. The Bhagavad Gita is important because in a very short treatise, in a small number of words, Krishna gives the complete explanation of the science of self-realization, of God consciousness. He's saying it's all about Him. Think of me, become my devotee, worship me. Doesn't say anything about humanity. Then in the last, his final words, Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadharman Purichyaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja Aham Tam Sarvapapebhyo Moksha Ishami Mashucha. Very important instruction. He says, abandon all other varieties of duties. That means humanitarian duties, national duties, family duty, everything. And just surrender to me. That's what Krishna told Arjuna. And Arjuna understood it, and therefore he put aside all of his family considerations. Because at that time, he was thinking, how can I fight this battle? Some of my relatives are on the other side. That's family considerations, svajana. But he had to give this up, because Krishna said, don't worry about the family. A higher principle is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the ultimate principle, because it includes everything else. Just like in a nation, when there's some emergency, the government calls upon volunteers, or maybe even it orders them to do some emergency work, maybe war or whatever. Then their highest duty is to give up their occupation or whatever and do the service of the country. It's a crude example, but we get some idea that sometimes one has to put aside his own personal considerations for a higher cause. And that's actually what the purpose of life is. Put aside our personal bodily considerations. Instead, take up the service of the Supreme. Everyone's looking for some kind of mission or some kind of to be part of a great cause. It's like recently there was some hurricanes and people were drawn to help, to try to do something good for suffering humanity. And we have our political parties. I joined this party because I want to see the good of the country and I think my party will be good. Or I become a nationalist. America is the best way, or India is the best way against other countries. We want to be part of a good thing, of something that's beneficial. That beneficial thing, that ultimate good thing, is to be on the instruction, on the direction of Lord Krishna. His party, Krishna's party, is always victorious and it's always correct. Just like we see in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna and the Pandavas took the side of Krishna. Or you could say Krishna took their side, either way. And the other side they were fighting against, so they were doomed. They were doomed from the beginning. They could not be successful. How can you defeat Krishna? It's not possible. He's a Jita. No one's ever defeated Krishna. And many have tried. Hiranyakashipu tried to defeat Vishnu. Krishna. Ravana tried. Hiranyaksha tried. Kamsa tried. There's so many examples. They're all cut down. So if we really want to do something beneficial for society, what can we do? I'm worried about humanity, I'm worried about the direction. Give them Krishna consciousness. That's the best gift. Para upakar. Parate bhumite hoila manushya janma jar. Janma sarta karikara para upakar. The best welfare work is to give people Krishna consciousness. And it's true. Because by giving them Krishna consciousness, they can be relieved of the cycle of birth and death. They can be relieved of having to take birth again in the material world. Isn't that a great thing to give someone? Eternal bliss and knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that those who know the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities do not take their birth again in this material world, but attain my eternal abode. So, we want to educate people to learn about Krishna's janma karma chame divyam evam yo viti tatvataha chakpadeham punar janma naiti mamiti sorjana. This is the ultimate solution to the problems of life. Otherwise, the problems continually keep coming. They say, well, the tsunami came, so now we have to help the survivors, the ones who didn't get killed, we have to help them. Okay, but then after the tsunami, then we have hurricanes. And then after hurricanes, then we have some disease. Then we have earthquakes, and we have forest fires. I was thinking, people who are trying to figure out how can I escape the natural calamities. So they might move to Southern California because there's no hurricanes there. Huh? And usually there's no floods and it's not cold. And what else? But San Diego doesn't have earthquake.
What about fires?
Ah, that's the problem. Yeah, so you go down to San Diego, you get away from the earthquakes, the cold, the hurricanes, the floods, tsunami, but then there's forest fires, they burn up the whole place. And even if you found someplace, I remember I visited Guyana last year, so it's almost calamity proof, Guyana. It's, and the temperature is quite warm all year round, and there's so many. But then, while it was, just after I left, they had flooding. Flooding went over the. They had problems there. We cannot find a perfect situation. You may say, well, I'll go to the heavenly planets. Okay, you can do a lot of efforts to go to the heavenly planets, and you can reach the abode of Indra, but poor Indra, he gets attacked all the time. Indra's always being attacked. Bali Maharaj defeated him. Kamsa defeated him. There's so many examples. Ravana. He's always being attacked because it's the nature of this material world. Abrahma bhuvana loka puna arvatanojana. Mamupecha tikonteya puna janmana vidyate. There's always miseries in the material world. It's meant for that. It's a place of misery. If you look around dispassionately, you'll be able to see that everywhere is miserable. Even the richest person. Do you think that Mr. Gates is free from anxiety? Do you think he's living a perfectly peaceful, happy life? He's in so much anxiety that Macintosh will defeat him. That he's afraid that the government will take away his copyrights or his money in taxes, isn't it? He's completely worried. And every second he's getting older, his body's falling apart, his mind is dwindling. And he's trying to figure out how much enjoyment he can get with his money. Luckily, at least he's going to India a lot these days, so maybe he'll get some devotion to Krishna there, but maybe not. Anyway, everyone in the material world is suffering. Birth, death, old age, and disease. How will you stop birth? How will you stop old age? You have your, over here they built a multi-million dollar research institute. Have they stopped any old age lately or any diseases? Yeah? Give them a microphone.
No, but they're trying to cheat people with anti-aging pills that don't work and make money off them in that way.
Yeah, turn it up a little bit. Anti-aging pills, yes.
Cheat people.
Of course they're cheating because it's the nature of the material world that everyone has to go through these things. That's part of the training. That's part of the purification. And those who are intelligent, they begin to wonder, oh, I don't like this getting old. Why is it forced upon me? I don't like dying. Why must I die? I don't like diseases. Why are they forced upon me? An intelligent person asks this question. Ask these questions.
We're just hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning about Maharaj Parikshit, and we were just hearing how Kali was feeding the cow, and how three of her legs were broken, and again and again throughout all the purports and the text, how the government, and the Brahmins, and the Kshatriyas, they're meant to see that all the needs, even that Brahmana was complaining.
What's the question?
In terms of the responsibility to see that all the material, not just spiritual, but material necessities.
Okay, that's a good point.
Even the child is supposed to die untimely.
Yes, I was thinking about that because Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was feeling responsible as the king for all the praja. It means all the living entities that were born in his kingdom. But how did he take care of them? He understood that the best way to take care of them was to glorify Krishna, and he organized a big sacrifice, Rajasuya sacrifice, for promoting Krishna. And so much opulence was offered to Krishna. Now someone may say, that's a waste.
Why are you giving to God? He's already wealthy. Huh? Why don't you give to the poor people? Like, what is it? One poet in India, he said, why are you worshiping Tulsi Devi, Tulsi plant? Better worship eggplant. Then you can eggplant, you can distribute, it's, you can eat it. Why put so much water on the Tulsi plant? So, no, the point is that if you serve God, even though He's wealthy, then everyone will be benefited. It's mystical. It doesn't seem to make any sense from a strictly material point of view. Because if someone's poor and I'm giving to Krishna, I'm going to the temple, I'm giving to Krishna instead of the poor people. It seems as though I'm wasting my money in an opulent temple. I could be actually doing some good for the people. But actually, the more we serve Krishna, the more everything flourishes. And the example is given in the Bhagavatam that in the kingdom of Maharaj Yudhisthira, during his rule, that the whole kingdom, everyone was satisfied. All the people were fed, all the animals were fed, the milk, the cows were running in the field, and the milk was so profuse that it was muddying the pasturing grounds. The rain would only come at night so as not to disturb during the day. It was not too hot, not too cold. There were no natural disasters during the rule of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Same thing with Ramachandra. Therefore, everyone's saying, Ram Raja, let's get Ram Raja back. The kingdom. Because everything was so nice. When there's Krishna consciousness, everything is adjusted. And when we... Now you may say, why? Because everything belongs to Krishna. That means everything should be given to the owner. Let's say you come up with a plan, you start a non-profit organization, and your idea is to steal from the rich and give to the poor. Is it a good program? You may think, well, I'll go and take the rich at night when the rich people are sleeping, I'll go and take some of their things, and we have a chain of thrift shops. We sell all their items with the money, then we feed the poor. No, that's illegal. We can't do that. So, on the other hand, if we give everything to Krishna, He will maintain everyone. He's already maintaining everyone. Nitya Nityana, Chaitana Chaitanana. Now, you may ask the question, well, why is He allowing someone to be poor? This question comes up. If He's so magnanimous and He has so much wealth, He could distribute it evenly. Well, then I ask you a question. Why is it that sometimes a doctor advises a patient, don't eat solid food for the next 2 weeks? Why does he do that? Because he knows that if this patient eats solid food, he'll die. It's not good for his health. He has a particular disease he cannot digest. In the same way, the living entities who are destined to be poor, that's part of their cure. That's part of their rectification. They should take it. Well, Krishna's ordained me to be poor in this life. That's all right. Let me just engage in devotional service. Yes.
The question is that why it was all started? Why the world was created itself? Why things started?
Why is the world created? Yeah. The true world.
Yeah.
Why does when someone decides to open up a city, why do they build a jail? Everyone knows if you open a city, if one of the first things they build is a jail, because they already know that there's going to be some wrongdoers, some evil persons, criminals, who should not be allowed to be loose in society. They need to be incarcerated and punished and rectified.
So the material world has all these purposes: to punish, to incarcerate, to rectify, and to purify them so they can again come out and be good citizens. That's why. The living entities have impure desires. The living entities want to behave in a very selfish, cruel way. So the Lord arranges a place where they don't cause so much disturbance. He has his own abode. He doesn't want to be disturbed by them. He's enjoying with his friends and his associates in Goloka Vrindavan. You cannot blame him. He doesn't want all these troublemakers around. Keep them away. Put them out in the material world and set up an arrangement for them. Okay, he maintains them. They're still his children, but they're disturbing, deviants. Now, if we're in the material world, there's also the opportunity to become, again, drawn back to the service of Krishna. Even though it's difficult to remember Krishna, but at the same time it is possible. If we meet the sadhus, the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Lata Bij. That throughout all the universes, the living entities are traveling, different bodies, different planets. But if they fortunately, one who's very fortunate, Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasad, by the mercy of Krishna, he gets Guru. And by the mercy of Guru, he gets Krishna. Everyone has to have Guru. Tasmat Gurum Prapadyeta Jigyasu Shreya Uttama. If one wants to understand the purpose of life, he has to accept Guru. Cannot do it on his own. Even studying the Vedas on our own will not be successful, because Tarko Pratishta Shrutayo Vibhinnana Savrashir Yashimatam Vibhinnana. It's very difficult to understand the Vedas. There's so many nuances and apparent contradictions, different theories, different philosophers. Somebody says worship Durga, someone says worship Agni, someone says worship yourself, someone says don't worship anything, all in the category of Hinduism. Very confusing. So studying the scriptures will not be work. Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gatapa sapanta. But if we want to understand the transcendental science of dharma, then one has to follow in the footsteps of the mahajans, the great souls. This is the system that Krishna set up. It's a good system. It works very nicely. It's worked for a long time. Even Krishna accepted a guru. So if, just to set the example, he didn't need a guru, but to set the example for the rest of us, when he came, he accepted Sandipani Muni as his spiritual master.
You said that everyone is miserable and everything, and there's suffering everywhere. It seems that a lot of people, if not like most people, would disagree with that. Actually, most people think they're happy and they're enjoying it. If you ask people, how are you doing? I'm doing pretty good, you know. I know people personally who are suffering, I think, and they actually might think they're happy, you know. So.
But that's Maya. That's illusion. That the man is sitting in the hospital with his leg up and tubes coming in and out, and you ask him how he's doing. He says, yeah, not too good, better today. How long? There's a lot of emphasis on health these days. Someone should be very healthy. But he's healthy. Whether you're healthy or not, you're still going to die. You may say, well, he died. He was very healthy when he died. He was in tip-top health. Still, death is certain. Who's healthy? Everyone's dying. It's just a question of time. And that time is also preordained. According to one's karma, it's already decided how long he's going to live. It's in the palm, it's in the forehead, it's in the astrological chart. It's all there.
So technically it's the gunas that put this influence over the soul that he thinks he's enjoying and he's happy. Otherwise, how could he be remain here and keep going on like this? Because if he didn't think he was happy, he would get out right away.
Yes, that's right. It's illusion that he's thinking, I'm happy. Look at the hog. Consider the hog's life. He lives in a filthy place. He's a very ugly body. And his activities are abominable. He has no moral principles. Everyone criticizes him. The hog is universally criticized. He eats even stool without feeling any embarrassment at all. Is that a very nice life? But he doesn't know it. He's oblivious. And the other hogs are also, they have their little group. They go together, filthy, all smelling, but they don't care what anyone thinks. But that doesn't mean that they're very elevated. They're just an illusion. There is a standard. There is an absolute standard, and that's in the spiritual world. The ultimate standard of perfection is to live eternally, full of bliss and full of knowledge. Does everyone agree that's a good standard? Eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. This is the standard. But here in the material world, we don't have that standard. No one's living forever in these bodies. No one's full of bliss. And no one's full of knowledge. There's so much ignorance.
Like you, what you're saying here is, well, it wasn't directly said, but that there's, for every enjoyable thing, there's a downside. There's an equal and opposite downside, right? You like your brain game book, right? You like to have a lot of sex, but then there's so many downside, so much downside. You did a nice, very nice research. So many scientists, doctors, who have researched this thoroughly, how sick people get. The more they indulge their senses for sensual gratification, the more they end up suffering horribly. And it's been documented.
Yes.
So, that's just
a comment.
So,
yes, we can analyze in any department, in any field, that Krishna, it's not that Krishna wants us to suffer. God wants us to be comfortable and happy. But according to our quota, Ishopanishad says that everyone should accept whatever is set aside as his quota. And he should not accept other things knowing well to whom they belong. In other words, let's say I don't have as much as someone else. It doesn't mean I should steal from them. I should be satisfied with what I have. Well, somebody said, but then how can I be happy? He's got more. He's enjoying more. No, enjoyment doesn't depend on material things. Enjoyment is actually from inside. The real enjoyment comes from within. In other words, a person who's very poor, he can be the most blissful person in the world. He doesn't have to have opulent wealth, so-called wealth, to be happy. The real happiness comes from spiritual knowledge and devotion to Krishna. There's so many examples in history of persons who were not wealthy, but were very happy. And anyway, what is this wealth? Let's say I have a lot of money in my bank account. What can I do with it? They say, well, you can have a big car. All right, you can have a bigger car or maybe a little shinier car. Because usually the poor people, they also have big cars. Big ones. So it's not necessarily bigger, maybe a little newer. And not really new because it's the same old tin, recycled, but it's a little shinier, that's all. And he can't eat anymore. The rich man eats the same amount as the poor man, a few chapatis, a few rice, that's all. And he can't live any longer. He'll also die. Sometimes the rich people die quicker because they indulge in habits which are not very healthy for them. You know, you see if you go to rich countries, you see people very obese. You go to poor countries, the people are thinner. And they're less likely to die of heart attacks or other things. So it's not that simply having money is beneficial for one's happiness or longevity. Especially if we consider who the wealth belongs to. If a thief steals a lot of money and he keeps it in his private place, he may be enjoying temporarily, but he doesn't know that the police have already got him surrounded and they're about to capture him. So this taking that which doesn't belong to us, we may get away with it for a short time, but not very long. It will be. So what is the solution? The solution is everyone should do their duty, either Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, one of those categories, and offer the results to Krishna. Varna, Shama, Charavata, Purushena, Parakrama, Vishnu, Aradhyate, Panta, Manyatat, Toshapakarana. Offer the fruits of my occupation to Krishna, to Vishnu. And then that will be the perfection of my life. Because then there's nothing wrong with maintaining the body and the family or even the country. But it should be done with knowledge that my first duty is to serve Krishna. And if Krishna is satisfied, then everything will be taken care of. And then what will the result be? We'll live happily in this life. And after giving up this body, chatva deham punarjanma, we won't have to take birth again in this material world, but we'll go back to the spiritual world with Krishna.
Some places in Prabhupada's books, he mentions that ideally, if a person can come to the standard of giving half of what of their income towards promotion of Krishna consciousness, that's positive. So in light of what you just said, it makes one wonder, would it be a higher standard to put oneself into poverty in order to achieve that level of, to give like that? Would it be better to put the family into poverty and live, maybe even like a dangerous life?
Well, as far as poverty goes, that's a very subjective term. One might say that a sadhu is living in poverty. People might think that the Hare Krishnas are living in poverty because they don't have bank accounts, they don't have cars in their name, so many things. So it may seem as though they're in poverty, but actually they're feeling very satisfied and rich. So poverty is quite a... In America, poverty means below, what do they say, $30,000? What's below the poverty line? Someone was telling me the other day. There's a certain... $17,000. Okay, poverty line is below $17,000. In India, if you have $17,000 income per year, what level is that? It's quite up there. So it's all subjective. We think unless he has at least, an automobile and this and that, he's in the poverty state. But what we actually need is just a little food each day. How much do we need? We can sleep under a tree. The six Goswamis, they slept under a different tree every night. And Raghunath Das Goswami voluntarily only ate a little bit of buttermilk every other day. So does it mean he was poverty? Chakra turnama shesha mandala patim shainim sada tuchava buddha dina ganesha ko karunaya kopina kanta ashita. They gave up. They were very wealthy. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, Rupa and Sanatan, were the finance minister and the prime minister of Nawab Hussain Shah. They were very wealthy. He had two boats full of gold coins. He gave it all up. And he simply wore loincloth, kopina. So is he poor? Did he become poor? Did he become unhappy? Gopi Bhava Rasamri Pabdi Lahari Kalola Magnamo. No, he became the most blissful because he was always absorbed in the mood of the gopis worshipping Krishna.
But like you're saying, we're all ultimately poor anyways because we don't own anything. There's only one person that owns everything.
That's right. It's only stolen property. Borrowed plumes. There's a saying, don't be proud of borrowed plumes. If it's not yours, don't be proud of it, that this is mine. Just like a chauffeur, he's driving a big car, and he's telling everyone, yes, yes. He's acting like he's the owner. But he's not the owner, just a driver. And anyway, even if we're very proud of our possessions, what happens at the time of death? We have to give them all up. We cannot take them with us. So where is the proprietorship? Other questions? We have a few more minutes. Yes.
How do you choose a guru?
Pardon?
How do you choose a guru? Because there are thousands of gurus.
Yes. Well, some preliminary education is required. One has to at least know what a guru is. What when we speak of guru, what do we mean? So the Vedas give us some information. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shayutvam shabde parecha nishnatam brahmani upashamashram. So they say that brahmani upashram, he must be fixed in the spiritual activities. Then in another place it says, Samitpani Shotriyam Brahmanishtam. He is a humble servant of his spiritual master, and he's heard from Shotriyam Brahmanishtam. He's heard the transcendental knowledge from the higher authorities. If he doesn't have knowledge, then he's not a guru. He has to have knowledge. Guru means weighty. He's very heavy in knowledge. Guru Napi means he's weighty with knowledge. Where did he get his knowledge? Oh, he made it up? No. Did he get it from the library? No. He has to get it from the sampradaya, from the parampara. Evam parampara traptam imam raja shayo vidu. The transcendental knowledge is coming down from Krishna. Krishna is the source. He's the source of all knowledge. Then Krishna instructs, just like we have here, the disciplic succession. Krishna instructs Brahma. Brahma instructs Narada. Narada is the spiritual master of Vyasa. Vyasa teaches Madhva. Madhva teaches Padmanabha. In this way, each spiritual master passes on the knowledge as it is, without changing it. If anyone changes it, he's not guru. If he becomes interested in gaining more followers, it's like many times we see. From India they come to America because America is quite wealthy, and then they adopt, they give their own interpretation to get some followers. He's not guru. He has to teach the same thing. And he must be practicing the principles. In the Srila Rupa Goswami has given us six guidelines to see if someone's qualified to be guru. He says, Vacha Vegam, Manasakrodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Upasta Vegam. Etan Vegam Yovisha Hetadya Sarvama Piman Pratibim Sashisha. He says six things he has to be able to control. Urges. Because if one is a guru, he has to be able to control his urges. What are those urges? The first one is his speech. He has to be able to speak according to the divine nature. He doesn't just speak on any topic. He controls his speech. It's always about Krishna Katha. Then, Acho Vegam, Manasa Vegam means the mind. He doesn't have to go to a psychiatrist. If he has to go to a psychiatrist, he's not a guru. If he can't control his mind, he's not qualified. He has to be able to control his mind from depression, from anxiety, from anger. That's the next one. Manasa Krodha Vega. He can't become angry that things didn't go the way I want. Now he's angry. People didn't respect him, or he lost his something. Or even overwhelmed by lamentation. Arjuna came to Krishna and he was lamenting. He was crying. He dropped his bow, Gandiva, and Krishna chastised him. Krishna said, you are lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. The wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. That means controlling the mind, not lamenting. Because he has such vast knowledge. Then, Manasa Krodha Vegam Jiva. Jiva means the tongue. He doesn't just eat according to, you know, whatever is available. Someone was telling me about a so-called guru. He happened to be on the plane with him and he saw what he was eating. It was abominable. So that's not guru. Guru only eats Krishna prasadam. Only. Nothing else. And also in moderate amounts. Doesn't take more than required. Then, the next one. Jiva Vega Udra means the belly. Controls the belly. Not overeat. Not only what he eats, but how much he eats. So those are both. And Upastha Vegam, Jiva, Upastha, Jiva Vegam, Udara Upastha. Upastha means the genital. He has to be able to control his sex urge. He only uses it, it's only authorized within the institution of marriage for producing children. Otherwise, there's no use for it. So, the sex guru was immediately eliminated. There was one who came from India, very famous. He was called the sex guru. I mean, he's immediately eliminated. He's not authorized. And if he's speaking some nonsense, he makes up, he's eliminated. He's not speaking what Krishna said. And if someone else is becoming captivated by his secretaries and, he's not eliminated. He's eliminated. So everyone's practically eliminated. Because, we see, it's not so easy in the age of Kali. So many cheaters. Fortunately, there are some who are not cheating. And we are very, very fortunate to be at the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who universally is known as a non-cheater. Even amongst all these spiritualists, they all recognize. Anywhere in the world you go, they'll recognize, yes, here's the real thing. So there's some truth left in the world. There's a little bit of truth left. We just have to be sincere. If we're sincere to find a guru, Krishna will send. If we sincerely want to know the answers to life, to solve the problems of life, Krishna will make that arrangement. Nice question. So does that answer the qualifications? So a little primitive, just like if you want to know, let's say you don't know whether what you have is gold or not. You have some stone. You don't know if it's gold. Well, you have to get a little knowledge. Let's say it is gold. So if you go to a cheater and ask him if it's gold, he may say, no, no, it's not gold, but anyway, I'll give you $5 here. You may get cheated. So first of all, we have to have some preliminary knowledge. What is gold? What are the characteristics? And then we have to go to an authorized person, so we won't be cheated. After all, it's the most important decision in our life. Who are we going to follow? Who are we going to choose as our leader? Everyone has to have some leader. Whether it's a musical band, or whether it's a political leader, or a boss at the company, there's going to be some leader we're following. Someone we're emulating. Someone we want to be like. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Now we're going to have the Aarti ceremony. We ask everyone to stand, and afterwards there'll be feast, prasadam, and video. Hare Krishna. Thank you.